Hey, real quick before we start the show, if you could go to iTunes and leave us a review and a rating, we would be so grateful. It really does help us find more listeners and share the show with the rest of the world. Hi, welcome to Big Fat Positive. This week on the show, we have our weekly check-ins. We have a special big topic where we hear how Shauna went from TTC to IUI to IVF. And then we have our BFPs and BFNs for the week. Let's get to it.
Hey everyone, welcome to episode 21.
Welcome.
Hi, let's get started with our weekly check-ins. Laura, where are you at this week?
I'm at week 28. You know what that means.
Third trimester.
Everything's going pretty smoothly. I'm really happy to be in my third trimester. It feels like things are finally sort of moving along. I can sort of see the end in sight. And also, you know, every day that goes by, I have a more viable baby, so that's always just nice to know. Mm-hmm. So, so third trimester, I got my Tdap.
Good.
Yes, if anyone doesn't remember that discussion, what episode was that in? That was in episode 14, we talked about getting immunizations during pregnancy, and I got my third trimester Tdap, so I'm feeling good about that. So I can pass on the whooping cough immunity to my baby. And yeah, things are going pretty smoothly. Oh, I do have some baby name updates. Which, yeah, no, I set that up way too exciting a manner. Just that we have absolutely no fucking clue what we're going to name this baby.
Oh, man, that is not a fun update. Sorry, Shauna.
No, but the update is that we have a Google Doc. So when people ask us if we have a name, my usual cute response is we have a Google Doc full of names. But I've started making it even more complicated. So I've added in data about the historical rankings of the names and what the ranking was in 2016 and, you know, other notes about there was some name, I can't remember what it was, that to my surprise I discovered was now more prominent as a girl's name than a boy's name, stuff like that. So hopefully there's can be a little bit of an additional metadata to help us choose.
I feel like you need to share that template with the listeners too. I mean, you don't have to have your names in there per se, sure, but that could be really helpful.
Well, you know what I could do is I'll share the template with your name, my name, our producer Steve's name, you know, stuff like that, so they can mm-hmm. sort of see an example.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, I'll put that up in a public Google Doc and link it in our show notes. You'll be able to get it at bigfatpositivepodcast.com. Everyone cool. Visit our website. And then, yeah, the other thing is that I have just developed this complete inability to focus on my work. Like, just crippling problem, especially when you're self-employed and have deadlines.
Mm-hmm.
I am so distracted and so unmotivated, and I know I have to get shit done, and I'm going to. Like, the nice thing about having clients and being a freelancer is that if you don't get your work done, you don't get paid. So that's a huge motivation to actually get it done. But it feels like pulling teeth right now. I don't know why.
What do you want to do instead?
Everything else. Like, literally, no, actually, sleep is not on my list. I'd love to get a more restful night of sleep, but what I really want to do is, all the things that pop up as I'm puttering around the house. So, for example, getting the nursery ready. Like, I'd love to be done with work so I could put my desk in the garage and set up the crib. I can't do that. Mm-hmm. Also, when I go into my bathroom cabinet to get something out, I see the pile of mess of toiletries and medicines and stuff, and literally all I want to do in that moment is take everything out of that fucking cabinet and sort it and make it organized. And I want to do that with every storage space in my apartment, or my house. but I can't. I have to look at it and say, pile of toiletry crap, I will get to you after this deadline. But oh, it's just driving me nuts. I feel so scattered and I just want to do everything but work.
And yeah, I mean, since you're at home, those distractions are always right there in your face. It's when I go to the office, my biggest distraction is the tub of Doritos that are there for free.
Those are also a delicious distraction.
Yes, but, you know, it takes me 15 seconds to chew through one of those. I don't know how long it would take you to chew through your bathroom cabinet, but probably, like, at least an hour. So that would, you know, take away from your work.
Yeah, and I know that's the thing. Like, I know it wouldn't take all day, you know, because I have a very small bathroom cabinet. And I know it would be so satisfying to do, but I know it's, like, the hour I can't spare. You know, it's the hour where my clients are like, how come you haven't delivered this website review to us yet? And I'm like, oh, because I had to organize my toiletries. Don't you understand? It's nesting. So, yeah. So that's basically where I'm at mentally this week. Anyway, how are you? Where are you in your pregnancy, my friend?
I'm good. I'm 32 weeks. Mm-hmm. And the big thing this week, I have two things. The big one is that I've been scheduled for a growth scan, like another ultrasound.
Oh, yeah.
At 32 weeks for ages, right? Because at my 20-week ultrasound, they found out I have the marginal cord insertion in my placenta.
That's right.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things with that is that maybe the baby doesn't get as much blood and nutrients. So they check the growth of the baby at 32 weeks. So, of course, I was nervous going in, as usual. But we had a great tech this time who, like, talked us through everything. I think, did we talk about before how we like to have kind of a chatty tech who talks us through stuff? Or am I imagining that?
We talked about how I've never had a tech. Every single one of my ultrasounds has been done by a doctor, by either my doctor or the perinatologist, who are also chatty. They're very no-nonsense, but they, like, talk you through everything, which is great. So I feel you. But yeah, I've never had a tech, which I think is really, really unusual.
Yeah, I've only ever had a tech do, like, the main one, and even in my last pregnancy. So I'm used to it. But the one that has done our two previous ones was just kind of stoic throughout and just doing her measurements and very focused. And, you know, me and Steve are like, oh my gosh, is everything okay? So this woman was so friendly. She's like, oh my gosh, it looks great. And this is measuring right on track and blah, blah, blah. So from the get-go, we were so at ease and happy. And baby girl is totally measuring on track. She's actually measuring about a week ahead, which is cool. And they estimate that she weighs 4 pounds, 9 ounces.
Wow.
Which, I don't know. That's crazy.
That sounds big, isn't it?
So big. I mean, it's a little bit ahead for her age, but it's, I think that's about right. Yeah, so that went well. Then the doctor came in and reviewed it, and he did a couple scans himself just to double check. And of course, he had to do his 3D pictures, which were absolutely more terrifying than any I've received.
Oh, really?
You know, I complain about these every time, and this is just the worst. She's head down now, so she's, like, really jammed into my pelvis area. Uh-huh. So I think her face is, like, all jammed up, and it was hard to get an image, and her nose was, like, smashed up, and I was just like, turn it off. But I don't want to say that. I want to be polite, because I think he takes pride in taking these pictures. And so I'm just like, cool. Thanks for that scary image. But
see, this is making me feel better about the fact that I have not had any of those 3D/4D ultrasounds.
Yeah.
Because my office doesn't offer it. I think they only do it if there's, like, a medical need to see something in more detail, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And so my only option would be to go get an elective one. And, you know, I thought about it. I thought it might be fun. But I had heard that a lot of people regret getting them because they're scary.
I mean, I don't regret it because I guess it just came with the package. I don't know. I'm not paying for it. But if I did pay for that, I think I would be like, oh, bummer.
But that sounds fun.
Yeah. So then he said, I was fine. I don't need to come back for any more ultrasounds. But he does recommend that starting at 36 weeks, I go in every week and do, he called it a heartbeat test. It's also called a non-stress test, mm-hmm. I think, where they, like, hook me up and, like, whenever I'm having a contraction, they, like, monitor the baby's heart rate and just make sure she's doing okay. So I'll start doing that once a week starting at 36 weeks. So.
Are they, like, real contractions or, like, Braxton Hicks?
No, like Braxton Hicks.
Oh, okay.
And then the other thing this week is I started feeling the baby's hiccups.
Oh, really?
Yes.
What do they feel like?
Oh, they're crazy. They feel like spasms in your stomach. Hmm. Just very regular, kind of like a pulsing spasm. I had them all the time with my first daughter. And so I've been like wondering, why isn't this kid have the hiccups? And I got him for the first time the other day and was like, oh, she's hiccuping.
It's the most adorable spasm ever.
Yeah, it's cute at first. And then when like she starts hiccuping at 2 a.m. and I'm trying to sleep and your stomach is just like having a weird spasm in one place. It's kind of like a little bit of a torture. Like, stop. I'm moving around, rolling around, trying to get her to stop. And she's just like,
you can't like scare her. It's not, like, you know, it's not. Yeah. Scare her to make her boo. Yeah.
Hold your breath, kid. Yeah, so that's my check-in for the week.
Cool.
Laura, we recently had our moms on the show, and it was so fun hearing their stories from the past.
I loved hearing what they had to share about their experiences being pregnant and having young kids. But you know they have so many more amazing memories and stories to share.
Yes, and that's why Storyworth is such a wonderful gift for the mother figure in your life. It's a way to capture those stories and memories for years to come.
And what better time to give Storyworth than for Mother's Day, which is right around the corner. Right now, our listeners can save $10 off your first purchase by going to storyworth.com/BFP.
Here's how it works. Each week, Storyworth emails your loved one a thought-provoking question that you get to help pick, such as, what is your favorite memory of your parents?
All your loved one needs to do is respond to that email with a story. Long or short, it doesn't matter.
You'll be emailed a copy of your loved one's response as they're submitted over the course of the year. You'll get to enjoy their retelling of the stories you already know or be surprised by stories you've never heard before.
After that year of fun, Storyworth compiles your loved one's stories and photos into a beautiful keepsake hardcover book that you'll be able to share and revisit for generations to come.
I gifted Storyworth to my mom a couple years ago, and her hardcover book is a special memento on my bookshelf that my girls and I love to look through.
My mom did one too and included lots of pictures from her childhood, which Sebastian and Augie love looking at.
Give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift you'll all cherish for years. Storyworth. Right now, save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/BFP.
That's storyworth.com/BFP to save $10 on your first purchase. There's nothing like the feeling of being confident in your own skin. No complicated routine, no multiple step protocols, just simple, scientifically validated solutions.
Absolutely. That's why we have to tell you about today's sponsor, OneSkin. Their products make it easy to keep your skin healthy while looking and feeling your best.
The secret to OneSkin's success is their proprietary OS1 peptide, which switches off the aging cells and has been clinically proven to strengthen the skin barrier and improve skin health markers.
For a limited time, our listeners will get an exclusive 15% off OneSkin products using the code BFP when you check out at oneskin.co.
One of my favorite things about OneSkin products is how easy they are to use. I swear, I've seen skin routines with like 20 steps, but not OneSkin. Just cleanse, pat your skin dry, and apply twice daily.
We aren't the only ones who love OneSkin. OneSkin has over 4,000 five-star reviews, and were recognized by Fast Company as one of the most innovative brands in 2024.
OneSkin is the world's first skin longevity company. By focusing on the cellular aspects of aging, OneSkin keeps your skin looking and acting younger for longer.
My skin tends to get really irritated this time of year, but since using the OneSkin face supplement every day, my skin feels calm and healthy. I've also been using the eye topical supplement, which I really feel brightens up my face.
Get started today with 15% off using code BFP at oneskin.co.
That's 15% off oneskin.co with code BFP. After your purchase, they'll ask where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you.
Okay, I will be the first to admit that I don't always prioritize my own wellness. With kids and work, it never feels easy to fit in taking care of myself. But with Allo Moves, I find it easier than ever to do so.
Same. With the Allo Moves app, everything I need is in one place. Yoga, Pilates, fitness classes, mindfulness, and so much more.
If you're curious what Allo Moves has to offer, visit allomoves.com and use code BFP for an exclusive 30-day free trial and 20% off an annual membership.
I love that I can easily find a class that's perfectly suited to my interests and ability level. They offer classes from beginner to advanced, and all classes are on demand, so you can fit them into your busy schedule.
They have high-intensity classes if you're looking to get in a good sweat, and low-key mindfulness classes if you're looking to get centered. They even offer help with sleep, which we all know is crucial for moms.
Ever since I watched The Art of Sleep on Allo Moves, I've been falling asleep faster and staying asleep longer.
One thing I really like about Allo Moves is that they create themed playlists, so it's easy to find content on the areas you're interested in. One of my favorite playlists right now is called Meditation for Productivity.
Ooh, I love the sound of that one. Unlock your personal wellness routine with Allo Moves. Go to allomoves.com now and use code BFP for an exclusive 30-day free trial and enjoy 20% off an annual membership.
That's allomoves.com, code BFP. allomoves.com, code BFP.
So our special segment this week is going to be another big topic. So listeners might remember in episode 12, I talked about my trying to conceive or TTC journey, which thankfully and luckily was fairly straightforward, fairly short. Today we're going to talk to Shauna about her journey in trying to conceive and have her children. And her story is a bit more complex than mine was, but I think it will really resonate with our listeners, and she's ready to talk about it. So, Shauna, thanks for letting me interview you about this. This is a very like formal sit down NPR style situation.
Yes.
So do you want to start by telling us how you started to try to conceive and when that was?
Well, first of all, I want to say that I feel like I'm getting a little bit nervous just even diving into this topic. It's not something many people know about me or my life. And as you can tell, I haven't really talked about it much yet on the show. And I think it's why it's very personal. And I don't know. I feel nervous. So if if you hear my voice quaver, me ramble on at any point, you'll know why. So just putting that out there.
Yeah, and I just want to say that I think it's totally understandable. And part of the reason we haven't done this until our, you know, 21st episode is because we were waiting for you to feel ready to talk about it. So I think everyone understands. And I think, honestly, our listeners, probably a lot of listeners have similar stories. So I think it's going to be really great for them to hear what you've been going through. So so tell us about what the beginning was like.
Well, the beginning was full of optimism and excitement. And I was maybe 34 when Steve and I decided that, you know, this is what something we wanted to do and we were going to go for it. And it just, that getting pregnant did not happen for us. 1 year, 2 years. At about that point, I decided to go and see someone and see like maybe what was going on.
And by someone, you mean like a reproductive endocrinologist? Or?
Yes. Yeah. To get testing to like see if something was going on. Because at first I was like, oh, we're probably just not doing the timing right. And so I learned about timing and I learned about all this stuff on my own. And once I learned about all of that stuff and started doing all of the ovulation kits and the temperatures and all this stuff, like it still wasn't happening. And so we went and saw a reproductive endocrinologist who did a bunch of tests. Of course, everything came back fine and was like, oh, you have unexplained infertility. So we got no answers.
Like, you have an undiagnosable disease that we can't tell you anything about. Bye.
Yes, exactly. But she was very quick to give me stats. You know, she's like, you basically have a 1% chance of getting pregnant on your own without help. Like, oh, boy. So we were going to gear up and try for like an IUI, which intrauterine insemination. And then I actually got pregnant naturally, like right before we were going to do this. So I was like, okay, maybe just like the universe was just waiting for the right time and blah, blah, blah. And then like 10 weeks later, I had a miscarriage, which I've talked about on the show before. And so that was a real bummer. And I decided I didn't want to wait another 2 years to try to get pregnant naturally via the universe's blessing. So I went back to the reproductive endocrinologist and was like, let's do this. And so I took some Clomid, which is like a ovulation stimulating drug, and we were going to do the IUI. And long story short, I missed the ovulation day.
You were testing every day, but it didn't come up, right?
Like it didn't never say tested that you had positive.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't using the fancy ovulation kit that you have.
You were just using those cheaper ones that I tried at first that didn't work at all either.
Yeah, yeah. Someone should have clued me in on that. But luckily, so we missed the IUI. She couldn't do the insemination. But luckily, Steve and I had been doing the deed, as they say on the boards.
DTD.
DTD, doing the deed. And that actually did get me pregnant. So it was a combination of the
Clomid.
The Clomid, the hormone drugs, and DTD that finally, after almost 3 years of trying to conceive, I got pregnant.
With your now lovely 2.5, almost 3-year-old daughter.
Yeah, yeah.
Who is delightful.
Yeah.
So you didn't have to pay for the IUI you missed, right? Or was it?
No, I didn't. It saved me a lot of money.
Yeah. So that sounds like it worked out pretty well. The Clomid obviously worked on you. Did you have any weird side effects from the Clomid, or was it fine?
No, it was totally fine.
It's just like a pill you take, right? It's not like you have to inject.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, Clomid's super easy.
I have to say that when my stepsister heard that I was starting to try to conceive TTC, she sent me a message and she was like, just start taking Clomid now. And I was like, maybe I should wait 6 months like my doctor says, you know? And I'm glad I did because, God, because Clomid, one of the risks is that you could end up with multiples, right?
Yeah, yeah. I think it made me produce like at least 7 or 8 follicles. Whoa. And so I was definitely concerned that, you know, I might have twins. I was very relieved on the first ultrasound to see there was only one. So yeah, that's a weird advice to just like go out the gate with the Clomid. Like,
I know. I know. It's like, all right, cool your jets. Like, we'll get there when we get there. So anyway, so that sounds like you, you know, it wasn't a straight path at all, but you know, in the end, the Clomid works. And so that was great. So when it came time to, when you and your husband decided it was time to have another baby, what happened then?
Well, at that point, my daughter was about 14 months old, I guess. And we didn't necessarily make a decision like to try, but it was like, we're not going to prevent, you know, that whole thing. I wasn't on birth control or anything.
Because at this point, would you mind sharing how old you were at this point? Just because that makes a difference, obviously, in fertility.
Yes. So at that point, I was 39. No, 38. I was 38.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
You know, doctors start getting real, like giving you real concerned looks when you want to get pregnant anytime over 30, I don't know, 37, I feel like. I don't know about what you've gotten, but.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So you weren't necessarily trying, but.
Yeah, we weren't trying, but we weren't like preventing. And honestly, I was like, it took forever to get pregnant the first time. Like, what are the odds of this even happening? And after a couple months, it did happen naturally. And we were surprised and excited. And I was really excited because I was like, oh, good. I'll have my second baby before I'm 40, which for some reason in my head was like, I just wanted to do that. I just wanted to have my babies in my 30s. And then another 10, 11 weeks later, we went back in for our second ultrasound and couldn't find a heartbeat. And so that one passed too. So I had a second miscarriage. And yeah, it was really rough. The thing I did this time, though, which I really was glad I did, is I had the chromosomes of that fetus tested afterwards, because I had a DNC. I didn't do it naturally. I just wanted to just kind of get in and get out of the that situation.
And
anyways,
for people who don't know, a DNC is where the doctor will surgically, they don't need to make an incision, but they will go in and clear out and make sure all the remains of the pregnancy are out of your uterus. So there's nothing remaining that will try to grow and cause problems, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Because, I mean, the other option, which, you know, they're like, you can just wait it out and your body will eventually pass it. And I'm like, obviously, my body's not keyed into the fact that this pregnancy is not viable because I had no idea. And it was probably at least a couple weeks, you know, that.
That's so rough.
Yeah, because you go in and they measure so you can see, like, about the age of the fetus.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, the age of the fetus is like 8 weeks, 5 days, but I was about 10 or 11 weeks along. So my body was not clued in on that, and I wasn't keen on waiting around. and find, you know, to see when that would happen. So anyways, the DNC was the right decision for me personally. And the benefit of that, and maybe you could do this if you pass it naturally, I guess, if you bring it into the doctor, I don't know. You can test the chromosomes of the fetus and find out if there were any chromosomal problems. Mm-hmm. Because one of the big things about having a miscarriage, at least for me, is, I mean, I automatically like blamed myself. Like, what did I do wrong? I had a drink before I knew I was pregnant, blah, blah, blah. I'm this, that. What did I do? I exercised too hard. I don't know. It's just like so many things go through your head. And the doctors are very quick to tell you it's probably chromosomal. But there's no reassurance in that if you don't know.
If you don't know for sure, if you don't test it.
Yeah. And so I tested and I found out that this did have a chromosome problem. You remember?
I remember. Turner I do. Syndrome. It was Turner syndrome. Yeah.
Turner syndrome.
Which is when you have one X chromosome and no pair. So for 99% of the population, if you have two X chromosomes, you are born female. If you are have an X and a Y, you're born male. And Turner syndrome is when you have what they call it XO. And there are some XO Turner syndrome children who, you know, are, you know, there's a range of, I think, outcomes, but most of them are, I think most of them miscarry early. And it's not, it's can be a horrible disease if you don't. So, I know, I think, did you call my mom for that one or was that?
Yeah. I talked to your mom who, if listeners don't remember, is a geneticist, and she explained it to me. She was so helpful and awesome and just really helped me understand it. And I felt a lot better. I mean, I felt obviously devastated, but I felt a lot better knowing that this was kind of nature doing what nature needed to do. You know what I mean? It wasn't me personally that did anything. Mm-hmm. But it was still, you know, that's devastating experience to go through that again. So
that was how long? So what happened after that? When did you feel ready to, you know, move on and take the next steps to try again?
So something about my personality is that when I'm faced with something hard like that, I'm like, the way I like to cope is to like buck up and find a solution of how to move on. I find I've done that a lot in life.
It seems like a good quality.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, sometimes I feel like maybe I don't process emotions enough, but that's just the way I handle it. So I would say pretty quickly, like within a couple weeks, I felt like being pregnant a second time kind of showed me that I did want to have another child, because I was on the fence a little bit beforehand, you know, but being pregnant again and being excited about it and everything made me realize, okay, I do want this, but I don't want to live through another miscarriage. I just can't. I'm getting too old, first of all. It really sets my timeline back a lot to be pregnant for almost 3 months, to live through a whole first trimester, which we all know sucks.
Yeah.
So bad. I mean, to live through all the nausea and exhaustion and everything. And I was just like, I just can't do it. If I go through another miscarriage, I'm definitely not having a kid again. I just can't. I don't know. There was just something about it. I just didn't want to do it. So I wanted to try to find a solution that would help me move forward with a little bit more certainty or something. I don't know. And I just so happened to like look into my insurance policy, health insurance policy, and found out that our insurance actually covers fertility treatment, which
is unusual.
So unusual. When I was trying to conceive my first child, I did not have any fertility coverage. I would have had to pay everything out of pocket.
Wow.
So this time around, I'm on a new insurance, and that just, it blew me away. I was like, that's an amazing advantage. And with my age and my history of infertility and all of this stuff, I'm like, I think I just need to explore getting help, trying to get this next pregnancy going. And then I found out that this is something I didn't know, is that when you do IVF, nowadays what they can do is test the chromosomes of the embryos. that you create.
Ah, yes. So you know whether they're viable embryos before you get them implanted, right?
Yes. Yes, exactly. And
that's huge. That must be pretty new, like within the last few years, right?
Yes, I want to say it is. I don't know for certain how many years, but it's a newer thing. And that to me was like the answer I was looking for, right? For someone my age who wanted a family, who wanted to try to avoid a miscarriage again, you know, I was like, that could be my option. And that coupled with the insurance paying for it, I was like, not all of it, but a good portion of it, which was super helpful. Couldn't have not have done this otherwise. I decided to look into that option. So I'd say probably a couple weeks after my miscarriage, I was calling my insurance. I'm like, what do I need to do? Because I know it can sometimes take a long time to get into a reproductive endocrinologist. So even if I wasn't ready right that second to jump in and get pregnant, I knew it was going to be a process. So I wanted to start that process.
Totally.
Yeah. And so probably within a month or so, I was in to see the doctor and start all that testing over again, and even more detailed testing this time, and get his opinion on what I should do moving forward.
And so it sounds like the RE recommended IVF is the path for you then.
Yes. He said that at my age, I was 39 at this point, at my age, definitely IVF. He's like, IUI, don't recommend it.
And then you still have the risk. You don't know if you're going to have a chromosomally okay baby or embryo with IUI. It's just luck of the draw.
Right. That's true. That is true. So I was totally okay with his recommendation. And I forgot, my insurance wouldn't even cover an IUI at my age either.
Oh, really?
They like actually required me to get IVF. I mean, I could have done IUI. It's tons cheaper, but I would have had to pay for it out of pocket.
Yeah.
And like I said, I was kind of, I know there's no certainty in life, and you can't have complete control over things, but I was trying to do what I could to make myself feel better about having some sense of control or certainty or something around this process, which is, I don't know, maybe that's a weird way to go into IVF. I know that a lot of people probably don't approach it that way at all.
But you're just trying to stack the deck in your favor. Like, you don't know what's going to happen.
No.
You don't know if IVF is going to work, but you're doing everything you can to make sure the odds are in your favor, to use a Hunger Games reference.
Yes.
So tell me about IVF. Like, what was it like for you? How did you get started? How did it progress? Like, I haven't done it, so I don't really know much about it except for what I've seen on TV.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I just want to say, I never in my life thought I would get IVF. Life is so funny sometimes. Like, you just never know what you're going to go through. It's so odd. So I just kind of was going through it one step at a time, just like, okay, well, here I am. I guess I'm just going to go with it. And I was really surprised how quick the doctor wanted to just get started. Like, he was basically like, where are you in your cycle? And I was like, oh, day three or whatever. He's like, perfect. Let's just like get you started right now. And I was like, oh, well, let me think about it for a minute. And this clinic is so great. They pair you with a nurse who like takes the lead on your case. And she was like, he can hold his horses. Let's just like, you can think about it and wrap your head around it, and we can start next month. But he was, you know, antsy because he's like, you're 39, your eggs are the best they're going to be, basically. And it's time is just going to keep ticking. So why not just get started? And
tick tock, tick tock.
Tick tock. And then like, yeah, I know, easy for you to say because you do this all day, but this is like crazy to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I took a while like to think about it and made the decision that I was going to start the next cycle. And basically it just, because the first part of IVF, I don't know if you know, is you prep for the egg retrieval, which is you put a bunch of hormones in your body via injection.
Like daily, twice a day?
Oh, God, injections. Girl. I don't even remember.
A lot. All I remember is that you were like, oh, I'm just like getting shots constantly all the time.
Yeah, at least once a night, multiple medications. I don't remember if I did it morning, night. I don't remember. But you like take a butt. You do this for a while to like deregulate your system and like kind of almost put yourself in like this fake menopause.
Hmm.
so that you can start from a baseline. So I was taking Lupron, I think it was, like an injection every day. And then once, you know, this process also involves a lot of intravaginal, transvaginal ultrasounds.
Yes, the probing ultrasounds.
Yeah, because they always want to
check. Ones.
Yeah, they want to check your ovaries and your eggs and your follicles and like see where you are, and a lot of blood draws too, because it's coupled with your hormone levels in your blood. So this is all stuff I have put out of my mind. It's so wild. It was like a year ago, and it almost feels like a lifetime ago. It's crazy to relive this. So anyway, yeah, then I started the hormones, like the stimulating hormones. Remember, I did Clomid, which was a nice little pill last time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's like jacked up times 1,000 this time around with injections that stimulate your ovaries. And you do that for a while and build up as many follicles and growing eggs as you possibly can. And then you get ready for the retrieval. You do a really big shot with a big ass, like 2-inch needle in your butt.
Right.
And you have to do it at the exact right time because
it's like to the hour, right? You can't just.
Oh, yeah. I think it was like I had to do it at like 1:30 a.m. or something.
Because you had the retrievals like. At a very, very specific time, right?
Yeah, it has to be like exactly 36 hours before. So I remember I went to bed and I think I set an alarm or Steve woke me up and was like, okay, time for your butt injection with a very big needle that he helped me with. And then you go in. Basically, it's like a surgery. I went under. I was at Twilight.
Is it laparoscopic? Where do they go through? I've never known this.
I didn't see the process because I was under, but from what I understand, they go in through your vagina and then from there, like poke through into your ovary.
Oh, wow.
So.
So you don't have an incision. You don't wake up with an incision. Cool.
No.
Okay.
No.
So you go, you get probed, and so it sounds like you got enough eggs to work with.
Yes. So we got enough eggs, and then the next step was to fertilize them, and then it was the waiting game. We had to wait 5 days to see how many embryos survived to the end of day 5, because that's when they could take a cell and send that off for chromosome testing.
Cool.
Yeah, so we got plenty. We were very fortunate. We got plenty that made it to that round. And after how many days? I don't know. After a few days, we were able to get the test results. And I would say probably like 60 or 70% of the embryos were not chromosomally viable. So it was really interesting to see.
That's so interesting.
How many didn't make it? And you get the report on what the chromosome problem was for each one and stuff. It was really interesting.
Okay. So now you've winnowed it down to the healthy ones.
Yes.
And it's time to implant
or not implant, I guess. No, not implant. It's called a transfer. And I couldn't even do that right away because part of my treatment is that the doctor found like a polyp inside my uterus, which could have also been contributing to my problems conceiving. So I had to go into another surgery like a month or so after the retrieval. I had to go to another surgery and have that removed. And so I had to recover from that. And then I could finally prep for my transfer. So it was a long process. And I was feeling glad that I jumped on it and got it all going when I did, because it all ended up being a lot longer than I thought it would be.
Yeah. And something I was thinking about is that, you know, for me, it took me about, 4 months to conceive. And, you know, then you have 10 months of pregnancy, essentially. So that's like 14 months of my life where, like, I'm obsessed with, you know, every minute detail of like what I'm eating and what I'm drinking and whether it's going to happen or not happen and all that stuff. For you, it's like years of that, like going through that shit.
Yes.
Yeah.
Basically.
Okay, but transfer, but you get to the transfer eventually.
It just reminded me that at the same time that all of this was going on, we bought a house. I got a new job.
They're just a few little things.
We moved.
Didn't the you had a massive fire next door to your apartment complex?
Yes, I had to run out of my apartment building at 5 a.m. because the building next door was on fire and blew out my daughter's nursery window, which prompted us to buy a house and get the heck out of that neighborhood. Yeah, so there was yes, that was literally all going on while I was doing this IVF. So it was a huge, huge, crazy time in my life.
Oh my God. Yes. So it must have been a relief to get to the point where you did the transfer, right? Like, it's this home stretch, right?
Yes, and hopefully. It's the easiest part of the whole thing. I didn't know what to expect, you know, and because I'm like, I don't know, are they going to put me under again? What is this? And it was the easiest part. I just went in and, like, went on a table and they just came in and, like, they confirmed it was me and the embryo was my match and just, like, put it in and I saw it on the ultrasound screen. He's like, there's the embryo. It's right there. And I was like, that's it. So that part was really easy. Of course, the waiting game, the two-week wait on that is ferocious. That was torture.
Oh, my gosh. So much buildup. The two-week wait when you're just trying to conceive naturally is, like, or freaking nightmare to begin with is so stressful and I can't even imagine.
Oh yeah.
With all this build up.
And I forgot to mention that, like, getting ready for the transfer and while you're doing it, you're still taking more injections, progesterone injections, taking tons of medication, estrogen supplements. So it was like, it was a huge, even though, like, the actual, like, transfer was easy, the build up to it and the prep and the mental stuff. And yeah, it was
not to
huge.
Mention how all those hormones must be, like, fucking with your emotions and brain.
Well,
right?
It makes you feel pregnant, basically. I mean, I was it's just like you're overanalyzing everything, right? And it's like, oh my God, my boobs are so sore. And oh my God, my back aches and blah, 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 and this and that. It's like, I must be pregnant. And spoiler alert, the first transfer I did not work.
Ugh. So disappointing.
Yeah, I was pretty bummed about that. And you know, they grade your embryos, like, best quality to, like,
what?
Worst quality.
I did not know that you have a grade system on your embryos.
Yeah, I guess based on, like, how the embryo looks under the microscope and how you know, the test chromosome test came through and everything. So my plan was to just basically hide the gender, of course, and just go in line. So it's like, best one, put that one in me first. And that one didn't take. So my journey continued.
Your A-plus student didn't follow through. So how long did you have to wait till you did the next transfer?
I could have gone into it right away, but they suggested doing a thing called a mock transfer, basically. Like, I did a whole other cycle of taking all those medications again. And then
no hope of actually, like, you know, you're not getting pregnant this time. So you just get all the fun side effects. Oh, my God.
So the point being, instead of going in on transfer day to get a transfer, you go in and they scratch your endometrial lining and test.
That sounds fun.
I got it. Like an endometrial scratch. God dang it. There's so much involved in this. Oh my God. I completely forgot about all this. And it basically tells the doctor, like, is my uterus receptive on that day for transfer based on the protocol? Because some women, the reason the transfer doesn't take is that their body needs, like, a day more medication.
It's so precise.
It is so precise. It's
amazing. I mean, it's amazing that it ever works. Like, when you hear about all this crap. Okay, so they scratched your endometrium and what did they find?
And that test I had to pay out of pocket. I was like, oh man, I was like $700. I was like, anyways, they found out I was receptive. I'm perfectly fine on that date. That was the right protocol. So then the next cycle, I prepped again and we put in embryo number two, and that one took.
Yay!
I couldn't believe it. I don't know if I had just, like, decided I wasn't going to be optimistic because I just couldn't get my hopes up anymore. I don't know, but I had convinced myself it did not take during the 2 week wait.
Wasn't there a thing where your insurance wasn't going to cover another transfer too?
Oh yeah, my insurance limits my treatment. So they would cover two transfers and two IVF cycles. I only needed one egg retrieval. And yes, they would only cover two. So this, I mean, if I wanted to try again, I would have to go out of pocket. So I was kind of like, oh, please, 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 please. And this time, the second time, pretty much the only thing I did differently, and I don't know if this is why I got pregnant or if it's just the embryo or whatever, but I did do acupuncture the day of the transfer. Did I tell you that?
I don't know if you did. I don't remember you telling me that.
Yeah, I decided at the very last minute, like, I'm just going to, they offer this woman, I had joined a fertility, small fertility group on Facebook, like a subgroup of my mom's group of wonderful women who had all gone through this stuff. And a lot of people had mentioned that was helpful. So at last minute, I was just like, fine, I'll just do that. And she came in and did a treatment right before. I was like on the exam table with needles in me for like 45 minutes. They came in, did the transfer, and she came in again and did another treatment with the needles. And I laid there for another 45 minutes.
Wow.
Yeah. So I don't know if that's what helped. I have no idea. There's I don't understand.
There's literally no way to ever know. But no. I mean, there's no reason not to. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It doesn't harm you. So no, that's awesome. So that's obviously what has, that was approximately, 32 weeks ago?
Yeah. Well, and it's so weird too, because when you're pregnant, when you become pregnant from IVF, you're already like a week ahead because the embryo's already been growing.
Oh, that's
5 days.
Oh, so in the last episode I talked about, or like 2 episodes ago, I talked about how jealous I was that you were only going to 39 weeks because you have that planned C-section. And now I'm even more jealous because you only have 38 weeks. But that's super selfish of me based on how much other shit you had to go through. So retract my jealousy.
Yeah, tack on another 36 months of infertility, IVF.
Yes, I take it back. And also, you deserve those 2 weeks of reprieve. So any wins. So yeah, that's super exciting. And you can't take a pregnancy test, right? Like a home pregnancy test. You have to just wait.
You can actually... They never told me not to.
Oh, really?
I don't remember. But I didn't, because I didn't want any false notions of anything. I just wanted to get confirmation. And when I talked to my nurse on the phone and she gave me the news, she's like, you took a pregnancy test, didn't you? And I was like, no, I didn't. I really didn't. I had no clue. I thought it was going to be negative. It blew my mind. I was like at work in the parking lot, just like crying, like so happy. I couldn't believe it.
That's so exciting.
I don't think I've ever been so anxious as I was that day waiting for that news. Oh, I'm going to cry right now.
Oh, it's so happy. It's so exciting. And I know I was trying to conceive at that point, too. And I think I was also like in a wait. So I was like, maybe me, too. And then, of course, mine didn't take that month. But then it took the next month. So we ended up being pregnant almost at the same time.
But I remember crazy.
I was like so nervous for you and so excited. So it was so great. Anyway, our episode is obviously going to be a little longer this week because of this, but I think it's really for a great purpose because your story is super interesting. And like, I'm sure there's a lot of listeners who are either contemplating IVF or have gone through IVF. And I'm sure, you know, so if any listeners want to share their stories, you let us know, get in touch with us.
Definitely. Or have any questions.
Yeah. Any questions for Shauna. But yeah, thank you so much for sharing, Shauna. I love you.
Thank you. I love you too.
You're a great friend and a great mom. So
thank you.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
Shauna, think of all the relationships you have in your life. From parents, siblings, your friends, kids, coworkers, even neighbors. There's a lot of human interaction, which we know doesn't always go perfectly.
Oh, you know I don't have a perfect relationship with my next door neighbor. And I can't change her, but I can work on my own reactions to her and how she treats my family.
Absolutely. Strengthening your own coping skills and setting healthy boundaries in any relationship are important. And therapy can be a great place to work on these types of things.
Not only that, therapy can help you handle stress, deal with burnout, and empower you to be the best version of yourself. Not only that, therapy can help you handle stress, deal with burnout, and empower you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma, although of course it is helpful in those situations too.
I've noticed that doing weekly therapy helps me handle the things that cause overwhelm in my life, like constantly balancing kids, work, and self-care.
I love that therapy helps me have insights about myself that I might not have otherwise. It's always great to get an objective take on what I'm going through.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule.
Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge.
Become your own soulmate, whether you're looking for one or not. Visit BetterHelp.com/BFP today to get 10% off your first month.
That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/BFP. Hey, listeners. This episode is proudly brought to you by L'Olivie, an award-winning hair care line founded by the fabulous Jennifer Aniston. You know, hair so iconic, it needs no introduction.
Okay, imagine this. Jen got tired of the same old struggle we all face, choosing between hair products that work and ones that are actually good for us. With L'Olivie, that dilemma is history.
We all put our hair through the wringer. Coloring, heat styling, stress, the list goes on. Over time, it takes a toll. That's why it's crucial to have products that not only repair the look of the damage, but also shield your locks from future harm.
Enter L'Olivie's bestsellers, the cult classic Glossing Detangler and Perfecting Leave-In Conditioner. These aren't just styling products, they're your hair's new best friends.
And here's a treat for you listeners. For a limited time, you get an exclusive 15% off your entire order at L'Olivie.com. Just use code BFP at checkout. I have been using the Glossing Detangler and Leave-In Conditioner, and I love them. I love how soft and healthy my hair feels after using them.
I love their restorative shampoo and conditioner plus intensive repair treatment. They smell so good, make my shower feel like a spa, and never leave my hair looking or feeling dry.
L'Olivie's products are naturally derived in plant-based goodness. No silicone, sulfates, parabens, or gluten, and of course, cruelty-free and vegan.
Unlock Jennifer Aniston-approved hair at L'Olivie.com. As our loyal listeners, you'll get an exclusive 15% off your entire order when you use code BFP at checkout.
That's 15% off your order at L-O-L-A-V-I-E.com with promo code BFP. Please note, you can only use one promo code per order and discounts can't be combined.
After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them that we sent you.
All right, so we end every show with our big fat positives and big fat negatives, our BFPs and BFNs for the week. Shauna, what do you have for us this week?
I have a BFP.
Whoop, whoop.
Yeah, and it's cool. It's related kind of to what I was just talking about with my fertility journey. So I thought it'd be a good time to bring this one up. Recently in my mom's fertility group that I had mentioned earlier, someone posted this article. It's an Ask Polly article. Do you know her, Colin?
Oh, I love her. She's great.
She's great, right?
Such good advice.
Yeah, so someone linked to an article she had written a while back, 2 years ago in 2016, and the title of the article is Why Do Women Obsess About Babies and Fertility? And the person who wrote in said, I have a question about pregnancy jealousy. And she works in like the fertility field, and she's part of her job is to help like go online with these forums and try to help women who are trying to conceive. And she just like noticed this pattern of like women trying to conceive being like anxious and like peeing on sticks and being so obsessed with this journey and this process and kind of couldn't understand it. And Polly's answer is so fucking spot on and like so incredible. And it like this article moved me to tears, being someone who like has lived through this and the way she like gets to the root of why trying to conceive can become, you know,
all consuming
for people, and how we can like look at these people in a different way and not look at them as like these little anxious women with their little TTC and, you know, their little acronyms and kind of judge them from a distance, but get in their shoes and think about how hard it is, how devastating it is, and how beautiful it is for someone to want something so bad that they keep going for it. Like, can we appreciate that and see the beauty in their pursuit instead of judging them for that?
Oh yeah, I totally want to read this.
My God, it put it like validated what I've gone through for the last several years in my journey in a way that I have dismissed personally, because I think I, even though I was one of those people going through that, I was also a person judging that process and judging myself for it and feeling stupid and like less than, that I couldn't conceive and that I was struggling and that I had to be part of a community of people who like peed on sticks every month. And, you know, it's just, I don't know, the very end when she talks about like, let's have some compassion, respect for these women who are so brave that they can put their hearts on the line basically and go for what they want endlessly, basically.
And not just their hearts, their bodies. Yes. I mean, God, the stuff just you went through, you know, it's a lot. I was like, when you read that, when you started this and read the question or summarized the question that they had written in, my immediate reaction was just like, oh, fuck that guy, like, or woman or whatever. Cause I'm just like, are you kidding me? Why are we so obsessed? Like,
yeah,
either you've never gone through it or you had a super easy time. Or, you know what I mean? Like, that's a very insensitive question to me. But I also love Polly because because my response would be like, fuck you.
Yeah.
Why? Because fuck you, go away. But she actually does a really great job of breaking things down and taking the question sort of seriously and not being, you know, just judgmental about it. So yeah, you got to send me that.
Yeah.
And we'll put it in our show notes.
Definitely want to. And one thing she says is like, we're not in control. Like, these women aren't in control of whether or not they can just have a baby. Like, if you are lucky enough to be able to get pregnant and have a baby, like, that's great for you. But, you know, it's not something that's in our control. So I really love this article. And I think anyone trying to conceive or who wants to have more compassion for people struggling would just really benefit from this article. I think it's wonderful. So I will definitely share it with everybody.
Awesome. I can't wait to read that.
Yeah. What about you? What do you got this week?
I have a BFP. This week I went to a magic show.
Oh, fun. I love magic.
Yeah. I went with my friend Stephen Carey. Carey is the pregnant pharmacist we talked to a few episodes back.
Yeah.
Who is also like very close to her due date. So we both went in as like super pregos to this magic show. And you had to get dressed up. It was at the Hollywood Roosevelt. And you had to look classy, you know.
Oh, so, like, my God. Fun.
We went to and it was actually really fun. We had dinner. And then we went. And we realized like this might be the last time we really like get to hang out before the baby comes. So we made the most of it. But of course, so we show up and it's at this like little hidden theater in the Hollywood Roosevelt Hotel, which the Hollywood Roosevelt is like old school Hollywood hotel right on Hollywood Boulevard where like the Oscars were originally held. And, you know, they say they're the most haunted hotel in Los Angeles. And, yeah, which makes a magic show kind of fun, you know, because it adds a little spook factor to its spookiness, you know. But so the show was this magic show called by this guy Justin Willman. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've heard of him.
No.
So he has a show on Netflix called Magic for Humans. And I actually hadn't watched it. Stephen Carey had watched it. And that's how they knew about the show. And they got the tickets. But I showed up without any idea of what was going to happen or his style. So, of course, we show up. It's this lounge theater. And they walk us to our seats. And there are four, like, bar stools with, like, that you're, like, leaned up against a wall, basically.
Oh, no.
And Carrie and I look at that, and we're like, is there anywhere else we can sit? And they were like, oh, crap. I don't know. They're like, this is, like, a real, like, you know, because people paid different prices for, like, different types of seats, and we kind of cheaped out. I mean, we didn't cheap out. They were expensive tickets already, but we didn't want to pay more for, like, the front center. So, thankfully, they found us two seats in a booth. So we totally abandoned our husbands and went and sat in comfortable chairs and left them to sit on the side. But we had no regrets either.
No way, man. Take advantage.
But so the show was just so good. Just like, he's such a good magician. It's not like big set acts. You know, it's not like David Copperfield where you're making like trucks disappear or anything. It's all like very close-up magic, sleight of hand. And it was almost, it's like 80% stand-up comedy and like 20% magic, but it's great. Like, it really brings you in.
Oh, fun.
It was so fun. But so then I went and watched the Netflix show. It's called Magic for Humans. And that is my real BFP, because obviously not everyone can make it to the Hollywood Roosevelt to see this short run magic show. But you can watch Magic for Humans on Netflix, and it's just delightful. Ooh, like, fun. He's super relatable. I think he's probably about our age. He's like in his 30s. He seems to be like a dude from Los Angeles. He's like, you know, wearing jeans and just being casual and like doing street magic, but not in that like super cheesy or douchey way, the way like
David Blaine.
Yeah, no David Blaine situation, no Chris Angel. Mm-hmm. It's like he's just talking to you and then he like makes, you know, things appear out of midair and you're like, what? How did the hell did that happen? So I highly recommend it. Magic for Humans by Justin Willman. And the other cool thing was that after the show, he like greeted everyone as they were leaving and we took a picture. I'll post a picture of that on our Instagram. And he had mentioned his wife was pregnant, and obviously he saw Carrie and I and you're like, oh my gosh, congratulations you two, and asked when we were due. And it turns out that his wife and I, like, basically have the same due date. I think it was, like, one day apart.
What?
Yeah, so I was like, oh, cool. He was really excited. He's like, I'm having a boy, too. It was like, we, like, wanted to talk pregnancy stuff after the show. I was like, well, you got a whole line of fans. Well, so
maybe he should come talk on our podcast about being a dad.
I found his wife's Instagram, and it's very delightful and pretty. She also made a post about being type 1 diabetic and being pregnant, which I think is super interesting.
Oh.
Maybe we'll reach out to her, see if she's willing to come on the show. But go watch Magic for Humans. It's really fun. I'm the only sad thing I'm sad about is that I didn't save it for maternity leave when I need to like stream lots of TV while breastfeeding. So,
oh, true. Maybe I should save it for next month.
Yeah, I think you should. Anyway, I think that's our show.
Yeah, it is. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. I appreciate it.
Yes, thanks for listening.
We would love to hear from you if you have anything you want to share with us about your pregnancy or your journey, or if you have any questions for us or for me about trying to conceive or infertility or IVF. Please drop us a line. We'd love to hear from you. Laura, where can they find us?
We are on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at BFP Podcast. And you can also join our Facebook community while you're there. And we have a website, BigFatPositivePodcast.com.
Big Fat Positive is produced by Laura Bierick, Sean Amico, and Steve Yeager.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.